We're very pleased at this time to continue our study in the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel. The story is about Saul and David. David has just gained national prominence by slaying the giant Goliath, and it has made Saul very jealous, envious, angry. Saul has even gone out of his head over this thing, and so he set about to be the declared enemy of David. He's even thrown the javelin at David while David was playing music for him to soothe his troubled mind. And now we're going to see that he uses more political means to try to get at David and to destroy David. Verse 12 of chapter 18 says, "And Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him a captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people." So Saul decided that he would get him out of his court, get him out of his immediate presence, and he would make him captain over 1,000 so that he could put him in some kind of hazardous duty and thus endanger David's life, and hopefully he could get rid of David this way. But this actually worked against Saul because it allowed David to go in and to come out before the people, that is, to have his actions to be observed in a public manner so that the people could actually have a closer affection for David because they could observe what he did. Verse 14, "And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him." Now here's one of the major advantages that David has, is that he behaved himself wisely in all his ways. He didn't do anything rashly or do anything that was wrong. He didn't exhibit the same envy and jealousy and anger that Saul had. And as a matter of fact, he didn't even try to retaliate against Saul, but he behaved himself wisely in all his ways. Now, this is certainly a good rule for all of us to follow. Whatever our straits, whatever our circumstances, whoever our enemies are, we should always strive to behave ourselves wisely in all our ways. That is, do the things in accordance with good, sound judgment. Follow the principles of God. Do not let ourselves be guided or governed by the things that are of the world. Do not let the mind of the world, nor the behavior of the world, nor the instincts that seem to lead man into making such rash moves, do not let these things guide us, but behave ourselves wisely, and as David did, and the Lord was with him. So this then allows God to continue to be with us. God is not ashamed of us. He does not have to give any excuses for us. He cannot say, "Well, I can't go there or do that or be in favor of that because it's opposed to good godly principles," because wise behavior is going to be according to what God wants. And so this actually not only worked in favor of David, but it worked against Saul because this was not the way Saul was behaving himself. "Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him." So this made Saul have more fear, because David didn't do anything that was foolish. David didn't put himself into a vulnerable position by making unwise moves or unwise decisions. And so this caused Saul to be more afraid of him. And of course, we know that when a person is behaving himself wisely, that if he has friends, the friends are going to love him the more for it. If he has enemies, then they will be the ones who will be afraid, because the wise behavior is going to win out in the long run. "But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he went out and came in before them." So we see that David's position with the rest of his countrymen was even more favored now. All of them loved him. He was the favored subject of the whole land. And the more he was in the public view, the more he had a chance to serve his fellow countrymen in this service to the king, actually, the more they loved him, because his actions were wise actions, and they had no reason to feel otherwise about him. Verse 17, "And Saul said to David, Behold, my elder daughter, Merab, her will I give thee to wife." Now, actually, when David had slain the giant Goliath, he had earned the right to marry Saul's elder daughter, because Saul sent out a proclamation before the giant was killed that whatever man could slay him would then be allowed to marry his elder daughter. And David hadn't claimed this right. He'd already won the right, but he didn't claim the right. Either out of modesty or out of respect for Saul, maybe he didn't want to put Saul on the spot and make a bad situation even worse. We don't know the exact reason, but nothing is said on the part of David about marrying the daughter. But now Saul decides, I will give her to be your wife, but he places a condition upon this. David yet has something to do to be able to be qualified to marry this daughter. Only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. Now, what Saul wanted David to do was to be even more of a brave soldier, to be involved in more dangerous conflict with the Philistines, and he puts it under the guise of, be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. That is, you serve the king very diligently, you be a brave, valiant person for me, and also you'll be fighting the Lord's battles. So he builds David up that everything he's going to be doing and everything that Saul's going to be asking him to do are going to be something good for him to do, something that really will be according to the very best behavior that he can have. For Saul said, let not my hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. Now this was what Saul's true motive was to let the Philistines get rid of David. So he kept putting David in positions in which the Philistines would have an opportunity to kill him. He kept sending him out to fight against the Philistines. And he told David, you be valiant. You be valiant for me. You fight the Lord's battles. But secretly, he was desiring that David should be killed. He was wanting David to be taken out of the way, to be gotten rid of. And what better way than to have him killed in battle? This way Saul's hands would be clean. He could say, the Philistines did it. I didn't do it. He could say David was a good servant. He was fighting the battles of the Lord. And as a result, he was killed by the Philistines. So we see then the ulterior motive that Saul has and the great jeopardy that David is placed into. And David said unto Saul, who am I, and what is my life, or my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king? So David took this offer of the oldest daughter of Saul to be a very great honor. And he very humbly and very wisely takes the attitude that, who am I? What is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be son-in-law to the king? Well, what does it matter if I throw my life away? What is my life? Who am I? And what is my family? We are such lowly, humble beginnings. We never had any anticipation of being in a position to have me to be son-in-law to the king. He considers this a very great honor, and so he is willing to throw himself into whatever is necessary to be qualified to do this. Now, if David felt so greatly about being son-in-law to the king, a king who at this point was wicked, a king who had as humble a beginning as David had, a king who was also familiar with being a shepherd boy and a tender of the flocks and the field like David was, if he felt it such an honor to be son-in-law to that king, just think what an honor we have today to be sons to the true king in heaven. We're not just sons-in-law, we're actually sons. We have a right as sons to be heir to the inheritance. We have a promise of eternal life, of resurrection from the dead. We have a promise of being eternally with him in the future life. And so what a great privilege this is for us. And what great duties we should be willing to perform. How valiant we should want to be to the king. How earnest we should want to fight the Lord's battles. Because we have a much greater promise than David had. But we see how diligent and how optimistic David was about being able to have the privilege that he was offered here. But we see that Saul is simply trying to trick David. He's putting David into a bad position physically. And he's luring him with the promise of this daughter. But in verse 19, it came to pass at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Meholathite, to wife. So Saul gave her to somebody else. And she was married to someone else instead of David. And so David was cheated out of this thing that was promised to him. So you see how Saul is manipulating David. He builds him up. He gets him to do valiant and brave things. He gets him to risk his life, and then he doesn't give him the prize. He marries the daughter to someone else. And you can see how that Saul is probably trying to entice David into some rash action, for David to maybe publicly come out against the king, for David to do something so that Saul would have reason then to publicly turn on David and to make him an enemy of the state. But no, David doesn't do that. David continues to act very wisely. But we see in verse 20 where Saul had another daughter who loved David. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So now he has a daughter that wants to marry David. She loves David. And so Saul decides he'll use this as an advantage over David. The thing pleased Saul. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. So he's going to use this other daughter, Michal, against David. She's going to be a snare to him. And it seems that the way she would be a snare is that he's going to propose that David do another brave and dangerous act against the Philistines in order to gain her. And he hopes then that the hand of the Philistines will be against him, that maybe this time the Philistines will be successful in killing David. Now we know the Philistines must have wanted to get rid of David. He had been much problem to them up to this point. He was the one who had slain Goliath. He was one who had been the great turning point in the last big battle they had with the Philistines. And now he was doing other things against them under the direction of Saul. And so the Philistines must have wanted David to be killed as badly as Saul did. And Saul kept putting him in a position where they could do this. And so he hopes that the hand of the Philistine may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in the one of the twain. This phrase, in the one of the twain, doesn't seem to be found in the original translations. Now, Saul wants David to want this daughter. He wants David to desire to marry her so that he will do a brave thing, maybe even a foolish thing, to gain her hand. And so, in verse 22, Saul commanded his servant, saying, Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law. In other words, they're wanting David to feel that this is more or less his duty. Everybody likes him. The king likes him. The people like him. And so it's only proper that he would now be the king's son-in-law. And so David wouldn't be vaunting himself. He wouldn't be marrying out of his class or out of his position in life. He's now earned the right to be the king's son-in-law, and it's only proper, with all the favor that he has with the people and the king himself, that he should be the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servants spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, Seemeth it to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing that I'm a poor man and lightly esteemed? So David had an answer to them. And he said, You think it's so light and so easy? To be the king's son-in-law here. I'm a poor man. I'm lightly esteemed. I'm not all this high and mighty as you may lead me to believe. It's really not a very proper thing for me, as poor as I am, to even think about being the king's son-in-law. And the servants of Saul told him, saying, On this manner spake David. That is, the servants were told Saul what David said. David's not all so inclined to want to do this. He doesn't feel that he's qualified. He feels that he's too poor. He didn't deserve this great honor of being your son-in-law. And Saul said, Thus shall you say to David, The king desireth not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies. You don't need to be a rich man, David. You don't need to have any money. I don't desire any dowry. I don't desire you pay me anything. The way you can make this up, the way you can give me all that I need here, is simply to provide me with 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies. Now this would be a very formidable task for David to do, to go out and kill 100 Philistines. And of course he wanted to provide their foreskins to prove that they were Philistines, to prove that they were uncircumcised. And this also would be a very degrading thing to the Philistines, who hated the very thought of circumcision. To them, it was a right that they did not want to submit to at all. And so you can see how great jeopardy David would be in trying to fulfill this requirement of Saul. And in the last of verse 25, we have the true motive of Saul given, but Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Verse 26, and when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law, and the days were not expired. That is, David went right to work on it. He was pleased to be the son-in-law of the king. He now knew that he could do something to earn this privilege so that he wouldn't be like some poor person that had stepped in here out of his place. But he, in the fulfilling of this desire of the king and slaying these 100 Philistines and providing the king with their foreskins, would then really be qualified. So this pleased David that he could do something to really make him earn this position of being the king's son-in-law. So he went right to work on it. The days were not expired. Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. So David actually, according to this, doubled what the requirement was. Slew 200 men. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full tale to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. So he brought the proof that he had fulfilled the requirement. He brought the foreskins of not 100, but 200 Philistines. And now some translations still say 100. It doesn't matter really, but according to this translation, he doubled the requirement by giving the 200. And he did it that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. So Saul more or less had to go through with this. He'd had too many other parties involved in it. All of his servants had been sending messages back and forth to David. And so he nearly had to, in order not to lose any face, go ahead and give Michal, his daughter, to David to be David's wife. And he might have even thought that by giving her to be his wife, that he could still maintain some kind of control over David, that he could still use her as a snare to David. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. So we see that the enmity that Saul has for David just gets worse. He now is David's enemy continually. He now will do anything at any time to try to get rid of David. His one main purpose in life at this point seems to be to get David out of the way. And we see how that all the things that Saul has done have really worked against Saul rather than in favor of Saul. First of all, when he put him captain over 1,000 men, he thought he could give him some very hazardous military duty and bring about David's demise by the Philistines, but this didn't work. It only made David more popular in the minds of the people. The people became more closely attached to David. They saw what a valiant soldier he was, what a good leader he was, what a wise life he had, and so they became more closely endeared to David. And then when he decided that he would give David this task of killing 100 Philistines so that he could get his second daughter, and David carried this out. He was very successful in it. Then this made David even more secure in his position in the nation. It brought him into a greater national promise. There were a lot of people who were aware of what was going on, and so then this worked against Saul. And he gave him his daughter then, Michal, and he hoped to use her as a snare over David. But what this actually did, it made David the king's son-in-law, and so it would make it even less of an imposition for him to assume the throne. When the time came for him to become king, he already was kin to the king's household. He was already the husband of the king's daughter, and so he would look less like an imposter to the throne if it came to the point of him taking the throne away from Saul. So this was another disadvantage to Saul. Everything Saul did worked to his own disadvantage. And so Saul becomes David's enemy continually, but yet David is even more of a yoke upon Saul's neck. Saul can't get rid of David. Everything he does only puts David a little bit closer to the throne, only endures David more to the hearts of the people and makes it harder for Saul to get rid of him. Verse 30 says, "Then the princes of the Philistines went forth." Now that is, the Philistines started another battle. They raised another threat to Israel. They went forth. "And it came to pass that after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul." So David was still more valiant in fighting these Philistines. He was the most wise of all the servants of Saul, or more wise than all the servants of Saul. And so he must have done quite well in this war with the Philistines, although we don't have any other record of this war with the Philistines other than what's given right here. We would like to note that in Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, a man who was in the first year of marriage was exempt from performing service in the army. But in the case of David, he seemed to forego this exemption because in this first year of his marriage, he appears to be still quite active in the army and in the service of the nation against the Philistines. And so the last phrase says, "So that his name was much set by." The name of David was well known now. It was a household word in the land of Israel. Nobody thought of David as being an upstart or a newcomer or a stranger or somebody not qualified. He was in a perfect position now to be moved into being king. And we know that God had already anointed him to be king. It was God's will for him to be king. And this is the way God works things out. It seems that every move that Saul made against David only went in David's favor. So that the great purpose that God had for David to be the king, was more and more being brought to pass. Everything worked together for good for David. And so it does for all of God's servants when they behave themselves wisely. We're going to close at that point. That's the end of the 18th chapter. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.